Live Clean Tech, your business, investment, and technology deep dive for a greener economy. Brought to you by DWR Eco and hosted by your moderator, David Wortman. Here we go.
I'm very happy to do another episode of the Deep Dive Clean Tech here. Today we will do it in English again, and I very much welcome Kirk Wilkes. He's the president and CEO of Mann and Hummel.
Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you today. I'm looking forward to it.
Right. And maybe we should start right in the beginning because you are the president and CEO of a German originated company. Maybe you can tell us in a few sentences what you guys are doing.
Sure. So Mann and Hummel, our vision is leadership in filtration, and we really bring that across to many segments. We're traditionally born out of the transportation industry, but today we really supply and stand for solutions for clean air, clean water, clean mobility, clean industry. And we are active in technical solutions across the range of verticals. As we're talking today, I think about clean tech, maybe we can provide some insights of what we're doing in the areas of clean air, clean water.
Yes. And maybe also let's talk right at the beginning. You have joined Mann and Hummel in, 1998, if we have done the research right. And 22 years later, you've became, the first American to let this family-owned German company. How did this evolved?
That's an interesting question. So first of all, yes, I did join April 98. I tell people I joined a German startup. In fact, though, in 1998, I don't think the word startup was used, but that would be my best explanation. You know, Mann and Hummel is celebrating our 85th anniversary this year. And I think one of the things to celebrate is really the diversity of our international team. So while I did start in the U.S. in developing that business with Mann and Hummel many years ago. Today, I sit and am privileged to be part of our leadership team, which is really comprised of an incredibly international and diverse team. So yes, we are probably still considered a German Mittelstand, but in fact, as the CEO being American, our COO is Hungarian, Romanian, our CFO, German. We have the president of one of our transportation divisions as Chinese. We have many multinational leaders, male and female. And I think it's a sign of the strength of not only our internationalization after 85 years, but our commitment to bringing the best talent.
Absolutely. 22 years ago, it was probably not just a startup, as you said, because in total, Mann and Hummel is 85 years old, correct,
right.
This year?
Yes.
And in what areas, technically, not just clean tech, but what kind of products and geographies are you involved in?
Sure. Yeah, to clarify that statement, in the U.S. when I started, we were just beginning our work there. So that's why I referred to it as a U.S. maybe startup. But we're active in terms of filtration and the transportation space, areas of liquid and air filtration, hydraulic filtration for passenger car, as well as heavy duty and industrial applications. In the HVAC space, we provide a host of products from HEPA filtration to chemical filtration, we call molecular filtration, for ranges of industries, for everything from clean rooms to homes in the United States, which are predominantly heated by airflow rather than by a different type of a system. So in the water and membrane space, there we're active in ultrafiltration, reverse osmosis, desalination, wastewater. These are areas where we are actively developing solutions today.
Yeah. And so today we will focus obviously on the clean tech aspects and a bit more on the filtration part of your business. But filtration is a very invisible product category, right? So nobody thinks probably about it until something breaks. An engine fails, maybe the water supply fails. So how do you sell this product, which always needs to be very reliable, but only comes to the market as a visible product if there is some urgency around it?
Yeah, that's a great question. We often have industry talks where we talk about the powerful protection of the invisible force of filtration. So if you think about it, water probably is the most visible. When you taste water, it's pretty obvious, I think, to our taste buds, whether they're is a potential issue or not. I mean, this can be solved with a host of applications. But when you think about air, you know, we spend 90% of our time indoors. You know, add to that the amount of time we're in a vehicle, which you could argue also is a enclosed environment. And, you know, it's really not visible to us the different types of particles that are entering our lungs through our nose, and until really we see maybe prolonged health issues coming from high concentrations of fine dust and others. So we use a lot of data and a lot of information from the different standards that are put forward in the industry to show that filtration, in terms of its ability to separate the useful from the harmful, which is in fact our mission, is very relevant for today.
And clean water also is important, not just for us as humans, but also for technical environments like data centers, which are being built. So what kind of purity you need there? What's the kind of filtration you're using in that market? And how is the current growth in the AI market segment really driving your business?
Sure. You know, AI and data centers represent a significant opportunity to really address the idea of clean industry, not only from the particle contamination, both through air and liquids, but also in the total cost of ownership. So if we start with the air side, you know, what we know is that inside of a data center, the challenge you have, as you've seen these hyperscale from what we'd say maybe were small server rooms 20 years ago to today, very large data centers, is how to manage the heat. And so one of the ways to do that is through air management. In addition to that, also controlling the particle contamination that is inherent in any type of an airflow environment. So we've brought forward pretty interesting solutions that address everything from the corrosive gases that might help or support the longevity of circuit boards to the management of particular matter that could potentially create a longer term maintenance problem, but also in a way that the energy performance, the amount of air that's pushed through that filter, is done in an optimal way. So we know that nearly 40% of all the data center energy goes into managing heat. And a big part of that is the movement of air or potentially coolant through the different distribution channels. So for us, working with our customers, we've really tried to create a balance where we provide very good products that have low pressure drop, high flow, but also can capture a high amounts of very fine particles. On the coolant side, there also the same challenges persist. So yes, there is more and more active use of treated water, and it's important that that water is treated, because untreated water can lead to pH imbalances, organic matter, clogging of systems, or premature damage to the infrastructure. So for that, we've developed very good solutions using reverse osmosis, ultrafiltration, nanofiltration technologies in coordination with each other to make sure that those liquid streams provide then really clean environments for the equipment to run and run for long periods of time.
What other markets are you in besides of serving the data center market?
You would see us in hospital rooms, for instance. So we are active in the development of clean air in positive pressure operating theaters. You would see us in commercial and industrial facilities where you would see typical office environments where there's airflow management used. You would see us in the development of clean rooms. So we have a very strong company in China that produces fan filter units, both for the local and for the international markets, where we're developing complete systems where we provide the HEPA filtration that would go into the development of a clean room, semiconductor facilities, and we scale that all over the world. You'd see us in the residential space. So in North America, we're very active. Again, as I mentioned earlier, the large majority of homes in the United States are heated through forced air. And of course, that air requires a filtration with its own unique need. In fact, there's a significant challenge in the United States right now with the recyclability effort of these products. We estimate about 3 billion residential filters in the U.S. are sent to landfills every year. We know that pleated filters take 25 to 50 years to decompose, where fiberglass filtration filters, which are a big part of that market, could take up to 100 years. So as states face landfill capacity and challenges and legislative requirements, we're actively also working with new materials to make sure that we can provide sustainability improvements for our customers then that require that circular economy view.
So across all these industries, what are the main drivers of driving your return, and how much can you actually use your product as a, let's say, platform product serving these different industries, or how diverse is your product line and to serve all of these different markets?
Great question. So, you know, when we think about a filter and you define what means the system for that filter, the heart of that filter ultimately is the media. There, Mann & Hummel has made significant investments, not only in synthetic medias for air filtration, but also in membrane development, because we believe to solve the core of the technical challenge, it's done at the interface of the media. How that media then is translated into an actual filter, be that pleated or rolled. Now, this obviously is dependent on the application. So for us, it's really understanding the technology to provide the best pressure drop, the highest level of efficiency, as well as the capacity, and finding that balance we call the filtration triangle for each of our customers' needs. Ultimately, we're driving for a total cost of ownership solution. So again, the function of the filter itself is to separate the useful from the harmful in the context of the filter itself and its application of removing particles or capturing certain contaminants, but also in the useful from the harmful and its ability to be the most efficient use of that filter. As I stated earlier, for a filter to perform, it requires a certain amount of energy to push either fluid or air through that filter. And we want to make sure that our medias perform at the highest level that give those customers the ability then to reduce their energy consumption, for instance, in the use of those filters.
Maybe walk us through a bit more around what you just described very generally around that you separate the good from the harm. So what is the harmful? And this is probably different for different use cases, but can you give us a different categories, what kind of harmful substances you're actually helping to get separated from the environment?
Sure. So if you start with air filtration, of course, it's fine dust particles. So we want to make sure we're removing particles, and we measure those by size, and depending on the application, you know, the level of filtration required. Up to a HEPA system then can reduce finer and finer particles. But not only that, molecular filtration allows us to also protect against corrosive gases. And these are gases that could be harmful to us in environmental applications. So we have customers in the off-highway space that require for their cabins within farming fields to protect against certain pesticides. So we have chemical filters for that, wrapped around HEPA filtration, to within industrial applications where we know those gases could prematurely age the life of equipment. In the water filtration side, as I mentioned earlier, it's about making sure we're capturing organic matter as well as certain chemicals as well. So PFAS, we know, is also an issue. So we've been working on developing filters for our customers that allow them, through the use of our technology, to capture certain amounts of PFAS within water streams, for instance. These are just some examples of the different matters, particulate matters, that the filter itself is responsible to capture.
So you just mentioned PFAS. Maybe tell the audience what's so critical. What are PFAS, and what's so critical about that? And maybe as a follow-up question as well, that of course you're helping to filter and to remove PFAS from water, for example. But some of the filtration technologies itself also are built from PFAS. There's a strange of trade-off here, right?
Yes, and that's of course the large industry challenge. So PFAS itself, it's I think often referred to as a forever chemical, and these are chemicals that do have very specific and value-added use and the development of certain industrial applications within filtration space for sure, but also many others. At the same time, those chemicals have found their way into certain environmental aspects that then potentially could harm us. So we're working with our own products to make sure we develop, let's say, fluorine-free products. So as an example, we have an aquadine module. It's a reverse osmosis module where we've developed a fluorine-free hollow fiber membrane that allows us, in this case, primarily for wastewater, sorry, not for reverse osmosis, allows us to meet the customer's needs. And so we found a solution. In other areas, for air management, for instance, we have been active since 2024 and looking for solutions, but this is taking a little bit longer. We know that not all filter media that we build requires PFAS. So many of the synthetic nonwovens today, non-impregnated gas fiber media, were already technically PFAS free, but others, products that we make do require it. And the tests show that that element, that PFAS element within the filter itself, allows us to perform filtration needs that have other benefits. So we do know there are further movements to drive restrictions, and we know those restrictions are going to be time-based, and we're working with those authorities in the regions we're doing business with to make sure that the transition timeline allows us the opportunity to innovate solutions. Some cases we've been successful, in other areas we're still developing.
So in practical, you say that there is an alternative also for you and for the industry in general to replace PFAS in total, or do we face a future where we need to have this compromise that PFAS will be always be part of some sort of a product mix?
So there are applications today where we require the use of these chemicals to develop filtration media and membranes that we do not have a replacement for. We're working on solutions for this, and we need the time to continue to innovate to do that. I believe with time, we have high probability in certain applications to find solutions, and others, yeah, I think we're quite a way away. So it's important that as we move towards the restriction of these forever chemicals, that we do it on a timeline that allows us to continue to provide the products in these areas that provide other sustainable benefits. As I mentioned earlier, you know, some of our products today, we've already been active and have found solutions. So it's a step-by-step process, and one that I don't think happens overnight. And I think a lot of the regulatory groups that we work with and the different governments around the world, they see this, and therefore some of those timelines, you know, have worked well with the industry. Others, you know, we're still working with those governments to make sure they understand the trade-offs.
So how do you deal with that tension? And maybe this is too negatively framed now, tension, but this, let's say, put a trade-off, as you said yourself, between that. Of course, you guys are involved in environmental technologies. You make your business and you probably all your vision and your mission is around saving the environment and making it better on the one hand. On the other hand, of course, you have regulations helping as well down the road just to forbid some of these very critical chemicals. So all of a sudden, your market would vanish because there's no filtration needed.
Sure.
Again, this is an extreme, of course, but it's
it's an interesting scenario. You know, when you think about the regulation itself, of course, first, in terms of Mott & Hummel, you have to understand filtration in and of its core is both an enabler and a contributor. So we in the production of our products, we have to be socially responsible. We have to follow regulations. So therefore, we take great care to make sure we're innovating solutions that are sustainable. As I mentioned earlier, some of those are moving on a faster timeline than others. But also, as a contributor to the environment, we provide products that also help our customers separate the useful from the harmful. And in some cases, that harmful is regulated. But we don't wait for regulations. We proactively develop alternatives across the spectrum. If you think about PFAS and specifically one element, which is PVDF. You know, this is an element that specifically in Europe is classified as a PFAS material. And as they plan to restrict further use of that in the future, albeit with a generous transition timeline, it's important for us to stay ahead of it. So we don't take the topic as a must do because of regulation. For sure, we do it because it's in the nature of filtration, a sustainable course. And we truly believe that the ultimate result of our work is not only in the elimination or filtration of these harmful chemicals through the enablement of our filter, but also in the function of that filter itself. If it's an air filter, again, as I mentioned, to make sure we're capturing the harmful particles or gases that could potentially impact us from a health perspective.
Yes, and I would assume, as you said earlier as well, that this market segment around filtration is growing anyway on a global scale, but probably also in Europe. And will you grow organically here, or are you also thinking about acquiring some businesses or pipelines?
So Mananomo has been very active in recent years in actually acquiring businesses in the life sciences space. And now we're in a very good organic growth path with those businesses. But in and of itself, I think as you think about the shifting landscape, the opportunities, the shifting regulatory requirements, more and more partnerships are going to be required. And therefore, we're also active, not only within our customer base, but also within the industry, universities, at looking for partners, investing in startups, looking for new technologies that we think would be complementary to us. So we're active across the spectrum. And I think you have to be in today's world. If you think about the future and trying to scenario plan all of the different environmental aspects, the decoupling of regulatory requirements, the changing of trade policies, to be relevant as an international supplier or customer, or to a supplier to our customers, then yeah, I think you have to be incredibly flexible and understand that it's only through partnerships, adaptability, quick response to changes that we can be successful.
So taking your growth ambition on the one hand and the regulatory side on the other hand, which we talked previously about it, what is the one thing or maybe the few things you see that regulators consistently really get wrong about filtration, which could really unlock the market for you guys?
You know, I don't know if wrong is the right word. It's really the timelines that stand behind the regulations to make sure that there's adequate time to innovate solutions where a current solution doesn't exist. So the idea to ban PFAS in and of itself is logical. As a human who recognizes that this chemical can be harmful to me in the long term, of course I want this, but you have to understand the trade-offs. So again, I think the answer is industry working with government to make sure that the transition plans or the transition periods have the appropriate amount of time. And then behind that, we have the appropriate amount of funding, as well as partnerships with universities, as well as other industry forums to make sure that we're bringing the best knowledge to solve the problem. And it's the combination of all of those that in the end solves the right question, which is how do we make the environment safer for all of us? So I would argue it's really just about how well we're coordinating and how present we are in each of those places. And then ultimately, what are we doing then to provide that from a total cost of ownership to our end customer who in the end uses this filter for a purpose in order to meet their specific needs?
So taking these timelines into consideration from the policy side, what really keeps you up at night running the business? So it's a really truly global business by now. Is it maybe also because there are so many different legislations in place globally, and it would help just to have a much more harmonized global marketplace around these products?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, as a business in the space, working with one regulation with one set of parameters is preferred, but this isn't realistic. We know, the world is a big place in which we operate, and so to the extent we can share information with different regulatory and agencies, we do this. We're very active in different trade associations and technical associations, making sure that we have a seat at the table for those discussions. So that's one way to help. Of course, communicating via our customers as well. I mean, they also ask of us and expect of us certain sustainability commitments. So making sure we're following their timeline, this is another. In terms of keeping me awake, no. I would say it's exciting. It's exciting times. I mean, we're solving technical solutions for the betterment of society, and we're asking to increase the speed of which we do that. You know, there are certain countries and regions that are doing this much better than others, so we have to learn from them. And here again, Mannenhummel has a unique advantage. We are truly an international company with over 80 locations around the world. And so with our leadership team spread out into these different regions, we can really bring these diverse perspectives to market much faster than I believe our competition.
So exciting times indeed. From different perspectives, you can say that. But if you look on yourself and the company, how would you define success in your role and for your company? I don't know, for 2028, for 2030, I don't know what your current objectives, what they are saying, but how would you define success for yourself?
You know, success starts with our customer. So we have to understand that they're the heart of everything we do. So it's really about making sure we provide case studies real time and show that our products make a difference, not only for their technical challenge, but for their ability to run their business. We do a number of case studies, and I can give you a couple examples. You know, we have a client in the United States where we provided them an optimized filter, what we call our thin line. It's an air filtration, air filter, where we were able to help them document, I think it was about $162,000 of annual savings through the optimization of that filter by eliminating 14,400 filters. So you'd say, okay, well, you're selling filters to eliminate filters. It's an interesting challenge. But in the end, you know, we want to make sure we increase change intervals because we understand, to change a filter requires labor. So in this case, the customer told us they saved over $80,000 a year in the reduction of labor that it takes to change those filters. Land disposal costs, we reduced their land disposal of the used filters by $22,000. We increased the performance. So in this case, we didn't have to sacrifice in this solution. We actually increased the customer's particle penetration by 50%. So you can deliver everything that they're asking for. It's just that partnership. So for us, success in 2028 or 2030, it's a story of growth. It's one where, you know, we're falling in love with our customers' problems, not falling in love with our solutions and solving those problems with our solutions. And we're doing this from China to Europe to North America to South America. We're really active in understanding what are their pain points? How can we solve them? And from a total cost of ownership, how do we not ask them to sacrifice performance over cost or quality over time? And this is a very intimate relationship that happens with every customer we have from one end of the world to the other.
So Kirk, in the beginning of our discussion, we talked about data centers. Can you give us a bit more specifics, maybe a case study around the use of filtration in data centers as well?
Sure. We recently released a new product we're calling Pro Pocket DC Elite in the United States. What this product does is it allows us to reduce the initial resistance of the filter, which then in support of that allows us to reduce the energy consumption that is required in order to move the air through that filter. So we have a customer that we're working with that reported back to us that they were able with our filter to reduce nearly 2 million kilowatts per year. This helped them achieve an annual savings of about $265,000 US dollars. At the same time, the lower resistance of the filter itself allowed then the client to remove an entire pleated pre-filter stage of construction, also then further eliminating an additional $165,000 in annual costs. So I think it's important when we think about case studies like this to recognize that, again, the filter in and of itself, it has the responsibility to capture the useful, the harmful, but at the same time, we have a responsibility that the use of that filter is efficient. So we can say that with this one case study, the energy reduction alone avoided approximately 1,396 metric tons of CO2 per year. So also helping that customer move towards their net zero goals.
Absolutely. Great example. What is the question you never really get asked by journalists, by podcasters like myself, which you really would like to answer?
You know, I think in the end, it's about just emphasizing again the purpose. So when you think about Mann and Hummel as an 85-year-old family-owned company, I still think the industry still thinks of us to some degree as automotive, but this is so not the case. Again, you know, we're really truly active in solving significant challenges in many verticals. And in this space, and specifically in clean tech, as we started with data centers as one example, to again, hospital theaters, to industrial equipment use, to managing the recyclability challenges, making sure that that our own carbon footprint is improved every year. I would like to be really very clearly stated or known that, you know, Mann and Hummel stands as a filtration company built on a purpose. And that purpose really is the separation of the useful from the harmful. And behind that, the industries that we're in, they're the direct result of those customers in those industries seeing in us a value that that asks us to come to the table and help solve their problem.
Kirk, thank you so much. I really like this catchphrase about separating the harmful from the useful. Another one is probably I think also use is clean the things you can't see. So it's really about this vision you just talked about in your last statement. So thank you so much for your personal engagement, for what you guys are doing as a team, obviously, and what you do as a company. Thank you so much for this insight and this 360 view around your business.
It was nice to meet you. Thank you for the opportunity.
That's it for today's deep dive. Time to resurface. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, we'd be thrilled if you left a positive rating and subscribed. If you'd like to dive even deeper into the topic or get in touch with our guests, you can easily reach us via dwr-eco.com. This podcast is produced by DWR Eco, your international clean tech consultancy for market and business strategies, policy, PR, and communications.